Hi, I'm Seth Mnookin, and I'll be reading to you from my new book, Feeding the Monster. I'm going to start with a section that takes place before the 2003 season, when Theo Epstein and the team's baseball operations department is trying to figure out who is going to play first base and be the designated hitter for the team. And at this point, they had already signed Jeremy Giambi and were starting to look at other options. At the beginning of the offseason, the team had compiled a list of about 15 first basemen and designated hitters who might be available for a discount. They'd gotten Jeremy Giambi, and still hoped to get Kevin Millar. As a backup, they had pursued options like free agents Brad Fulmer, Greg Colburn, and Travis Lee. Another name on the list belonged to a burly 27-year-old Dominican left-handed hitter, David Ortiz. The Minnesota Twins had released Ortiz in December. Gold Glove winner Doug Minkiewicz seemed to have a stranglehold on the first base job in Minnesota, and Ortiz's poor defensive skills and injury-riddled history made many teams wary. Within the Red Sox, Ortiz intrigued virtually everyone involved in the discussions. One of the scouts loved his swing. It was, he said, a thing of beauty. After looking over his hit location charts, Epstein's crew thought he was likely the type of player who would be able to take advantage of the left field wall in Fenway. Bill James liked the fact that, while he hit only .234 in 2001, his secondary average was almost .400. That's my kind of player, James says. Dave Jouse, a scout who was down in the Dominican Republic for the winter, reported that in the winter ball leagues on the island, Ortiz was a superstar, as big as Manny Ramirez or the Montreal Expos of Vladimir Guerrero. Finally, Epstein was consciously trying to find players who could help make the Red Sox clubhouse a more positive place to be. And Ortiz, like Millar, had a reputation for being both outgoing and upbeat, which Epstein felt was crucial at that moment in the team's history. "We wanted to get guys who had a certain makeup," Epstein says. "We wanted guys who were supportive of the other 24 guys in the clubhouse, who care more about team winning and losing than they do about their own stats." Epstein thought that Ortiz, like Millar, had the kind of loose personality that could help the team get through the season in a city like Boston. That's not to say the Red Sox didn't have reservations. Most pressing were their concerns about Ortiz's age. Foreign-born players are known to claim to be younger than they really are, so it will seem as if their peak years are still ahead of them. And Ortiz had given his age as 17 when he broke into professional baseball in the States a decade earlier. Instead of simply throwing up his hands, Epstein asked James to see if he could find a way to determine anything further about Ortiz's likely age. James explains, "I did a study of his career progression up to that point, identifying historical players who had very similar career paths up to that point in time, and concluded that, on average, they were exactly the age that David claimed to be. That was a fun little study. I had never done anything like that before." With that settled, Epstein made his move, acquiring the player that would change both Epstein's and the Red Sox's futures. On January 22, 2003, the Red Sox signed David Ortiz to a one-year, $1.25 million deal. "We knew he had breakout potential," says Epstein. "He was a guy that brought more than just raw power. He used the whole field. He seemed to be closing up some of his holes. Just knew how to hit. You put that all together in a ballpark that will reward those tendencies, and yeah, there was always the possibility that he'd become a star." Still, not long before the Sox signed Ortiz, they had inked former Yankees pitcher Ramiro Mendoza to a two-year deal worth $6.5 million. And, as Bill James notes, "We weren't any more excited about the one than we were about the other." This next section takes place in Game 5 of the 2004 American League Championship Series against the Yankees. And by this point, obviously, Ortiz had a well-established reputation in Boston as one of the best clutch hitters ever to play the game. Ortiz is often described as a hitting genius, as if his talent is purely God-given. He's more comfortable than many other players, talking with and teasing reporters. But English is not his first language, and he often plays the part of the friendly jokester. However, Ortiz works on his hitting as much as anyone in baseball. While his teammates are in the field, Ortiz often retreats to the Red Sox clubhouse to study his previous at-bats against that night's pitcher. Ortiz had been preparing for the Yankees' Esteban Loaiza ever since he'd taken the mound a couple of innings earlier. "I wasn't trying to go too crazy with him," Ortiz said later. Because of the late movement on Loaiza's pitches, Ortiz said, he, quote, just wanted to stay on the ball longer. Loaiza's first pitch looked hittable, and Ortiz took a monstrous cut. But at the last moment, the ball dove down and away, and Ortiz missed. Strike one. A ball and a foul made it 1-2. The Yankees were one strike away from sending the game, which had already taken longer than any postseason game in baseball history, into the 15th inning. The fourth pitch was outside, but not by enough for Ortiz to take, and he punched it foul. He hit the next pitch deep enough to be a home run, but it hooked foul into the right field stands. Loaiza followed with another ball, bringing the count even to 2-2. Ortiz stepped out of the batter's box. As Ortiz and Loaiza battled, Fenway was in a complete frenzy. A group of young men just behind home plate had been pounding on the dividing wall that separated the field from the stands since the eighth inning. Down the third base line, ESPN's Peter Gammon stood, poised by the entrance to the field, as he waited for the game to end so he could run out and collect a few quick on-camera quotes. He'd been standing there for a couple of hours already, ever since the bottom of the eighth, when the Yankees looked as if they were about to put away the game and the series. Gammons, who'd seen the Red Sox beat the Cincinnati Reds in extra innings in Game 6 of the 1975 World Series, couldn't seem to erase the grin from his face. Unbelievable, he occasionally murmured, shaking his head. Ortiz knew a walk would load the bases, and with Doug Mankiewicz on deck, he also knew the Yankees would much prefer to pitch to the light-hitting defensive specialist than to the man whose postseason highlight reel seemed to grow with each passing day. At this point, the difference between men in first and second and men on every base was negligible. With two outs, the lead runner would be off on contact in either case, and a base hit would likely win the game regardless of whether Damon was on second or third. Even with two strikes, Ortiz knew Loaiza wasn't going to give him anything on the fat part of the plate, and the way Loaiza was pitching, he could keep on painting the corners forever. Ortiz dug in, determined to foul off as many pitches as it took until there was one he could handle. And so Ortiz fouled off the seventh pitch of the at-bat, and then the eighth and the ninth. As he stepped out of the batter's box again, he examined his bat before seizing it by the barrel and smacking it, handle first, into the ground to make sure one of Loaiza's cutters hadn't splintered it. Satisfied, he tucked it under his arm, spat into his gloves once again, smacked his hands together, and settled back into hit. On the 10th pitch of David Ortiz's 7th plate appearance of the night, Loaiza threw a cut fastball in on Ortiz's hands. Ortiz, no longer swinging for the fences, fisted the ball over Derek Jeter's head, where it fell in front of center fielder Bernie Williams. On national television, commentator Joe Buck exclaimed, "Damon coming to the plate, he can keep on running to New York. Game 6, tomorrow night." As Loaiza walked dejectedly off the mound, he spit out his gum and took a swat at it with his glove. This had been the best he'd pitched all year, and still Ortiz had beaten him. It was Ortiz's second walk-off hit of the series, and his third of the postseason. No other player in history had hit more than two in his entire career. Afterward, Theo Epstein said, "It might be the greatest game ever played. I'd like to hear other nominations. That might have been one of the greatest at-bats to end the greatest game ever played." Pedro Martinez, who'd made headlines in September after referring to the Yankees as "my daddy" after a tough loss to New York, said simply, "The Yankees need to think about who's their big poppy."